Welcome to the Minute Maid Gang Podcast, episode 222. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with the patriotic Tim Elliott.
And I'm not a twit.
Yeah. Graham Thickens.
Hey, I'm marching around the kitchen.
And Phil Wilson.
Monty Python's Flying Circus.
That's right. It is. Well, so it's actually John Philip Sousa. It's a song called The Liberty Bell. And so I figured with all this NSA stuff, this seemed really appropriate. And then
sort of
it was,
Monty Python meets NSA meets.
Yeah, what I wonder why Monty Python picked this.
I know why, and I'm going to put a link in. And it explains it in this Wikipedia article that Terry Gilliam, who of course is U.S. based, chose it because they didn't have any money for a theme song, and then they put in at the end of the beginning here they went, when the guy's stepping on one of them and. And but that's why he chose it, because it was copyright free and it was in the public domain and they didn't have any money. So
okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So
sounds like us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we use 30 seconds of everything. Yeah.
We're looking for public domain.
We are. Or the Music Alley stuff's great. I mean, it's a very podcast friendly, but they don't keep it very updated. That's the only downside. I don't know how many people use it, but
yeah, I think that ship has sailed.
Yeah, I think so too. But so big story, the big story.
Yeah,
in
the
Minnesota.
Big story. Yeah, definitely.
3D baby.
Stratus buys 3D printer MakerBot. I actually was surprised. Were you guys surprised, Tim? You really well. All four of us are following this space pretty closely.
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, you get a big number like that, and you go for it.
Well, I mean, him selling, but them buying.
It makes sense for both companies, really. The company that was buying them, Stratasys, their cheapest printer is something like 10 grand. So having something that's a couple $1,000 or less is a good idea for them.
So you don't think this is like Cisco buying Linksys or Flip Camera or.
No, I think that it gives both parties, because what is the MakerBot is like a little over $2,000. So it gives them a, entry level kind of a thing. And then, they can probably make something in between that too, some $5,000 or $6,000, and they can address the entire market. So it sounds like a really good deal. And the MakerBot guy, he's going to continue to run that business.
Yeah,
just like he's running it now.
Yep.
So, for him, it just provides more capital and probably a lot more opportunity to grow his business.
Well, that's how I would look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a great deal.
Yeah. Well, I say hats off to Bree Pettis. I congratulated him on Twitter and I said, I met him last fall at the Defrag Blur conference. And I said, welcome to Minnesota, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink. But I said, hey, it's a great place for tech. So maybe we'll see him in Minnesota a little more often.
That'd
I don't know if
great.
He's been here to speak to the significant 3D printing crowd we have in town here. But hopefully he will be now paying visits to the parent company.
Yeah.
But I looked at that deal and I couldn't believe the price. I mean, it's 10x current revenue run rate. And if they hit their earnout targets, it'll be 15x current revenue run rate. That's a huge price.
Well, but you know what? It makes perfect sense because MakerBot's a platform. They've got a huge ecosystem around it. There's designers who are creating plans that you can just buy and download and then print. And the thing that really sort of turned me a little bit on 3D printing away from pure hyperbole that, it was going to be the replicator from Star Trek, was when I was watching an episode of Jay Leno's Garage with my dad, who was a huge car buff. And Jay Leno had a guy on there from fill in the blank, some other 3D printing company. I don't know if they OEM from Stratasys or what, but Jay Leno had the guy there and they were talking about how they print parts for these old cars because they're not available anymore. They can't find them. So they actually make the parts and then they paint them. And, they're not making metal parts. They're making, little plastic knobs for radios and things like that that are broken and lost. But then I began to look at that and I thought, oh my God, I mean, pretty much anything that's been made, you know, cause now you've got Ford that's out making chassis for cars. You can buy, you know, a 67 Mustang and OEM it, and they give you the chassis and the body panels, and then you can do everything else. And so you got a 3D printer, you could essentially recreate the car. So,
well, but you said the magic word. Plastic parts is fine. It's the metal parts that are the tough thing. And apparently they're working on that. Or are there certain things that are being made of metal, or is that really in the R&D phase?
I think it's
3D.
Yeah, I think it's because right now it's just thermoplastics and photopolymers are the two primary areas that they have not, as far as I know, they have not done anything like liquid metal to be able to print from.
Right, so, right. That's not happening yet. Did I also read that part of the attraction that Stratasys saw with MakerBot was something about the materials they are using or have access to, or am I not remembering correctly? Was there
some that?
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But you know, the way I read this thing is Stratasys now suddenly enters the mainstream, because in the tech community, at least, they just aren't very well known. You know, maybe they're well known in the manufacturing community, but they have hardly been a high profile company. And I think, but that is an advantage. I was chatting with Rod Weber day before yesterday, and he said, yeah, at least it's going to bring more attention to Minnesota. People are going to go, who the hell is this company in Minnesota called Stratasys? Even though they're a public firm, let's face it, they have not been a high profile PR oriented, you know, high awareness kind of a
company. Well, they're too high end. Yeah,
they are. Well, true. And in certain circles, they're very well known. And then when they joined up with the Israeli firm, and they actually kind of are co-headquartered now, right? So they're headquartered in Israel and Edina.
Well,
right?
It's Edina, yes. I think, isn't it?
Oh, is it Edina now? I don't know.
Well, they're over in that Golden Triangle, but I think they're just on the Edina side. I'm not sure.
Well, and I live not far from there, and I don't even know where they are.
Right,
That's how low profile they are to me.
Who put the link in here in the show notes to the 3D printing Don't Believe the Hype article in CBS Money Watch?
I saw that and read it, and I thought, whoa, talk about a letdown, letting the air out of the 3D hype bag. article sure does it. You know, basically saying, hey, it's 10 years away before this is really going to be anything close to mainstream. But yeah, I mean, it's they're hard to use, these printers. You know, it's pretty doggone geeky crowd that's using them. There's not a lot of stuff you can print yet, even though there's thousands of stuff on Thingiverse. You know, what do they call them?
It's a library of objects, printable objects.
Things you can print, but they say in this article that there really isn't all that much in there that's genuinely useful yet. And then there are significant legal hurdles with IP, and you can bet that companies that own the design of certain things aren't going to like just anybody going and printing them off without paying them money, you know. So I found it a fascinating article in Money Watch.
Well, Tim, don't you look at this as being somewhat analogous to the desktop publishing revolution?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, at first it starts out and there's, you know, people are printing things that have 87 fonts in them and clip art and all kinds of crap. And then
it started out the same way, too. You had service bureaus where you went and took your, you know, your disks.
To the Agfa Chroma Press or the Indigo eprint. Yep.
Well, no, that was even before that. This laser printers, take your stuff in, because the laser printer itself was like $3,000.
Right.
And then as
more like six,
as the price came down, you know, then you got one for your house. So the same thing is going to happen here when the price gets, you know, $500 or something, you know, a lot of people are going to pick these things up.
Yeah.
We'll really have this huge explosion.
Did you read where Staples is already selling one?
Yes.
It's not a MakerBot, though. It's some other brand.
Well, it's the one that we saw down at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design.
Oh, the Cube?
Yeah. The Cube that's thing? The one that, that's oh. the one they're selling.
Oh, I'll be damned.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's I mean, Phil, do you see yourself, would you buy a 3D printer even at this stage?
You know, not at this point in time, simply because I can't think of anything that I really need to print in 3D. I'm not doing any prototyping, again, at this point in time in any of the businesses that I'm involved in, yeah. Which I think is, or, I mean, I could definitely see it if I were maybe a younger father with smaller kids to be able to make 3D toys. You know, I had the opportunity to talk to Chris Anderson from Wired quite a while back at MEMA, and oh, yeah. we were chatting off camera, and you know, we were talking about 3D printing and that sort of a thing. And he said, boy, if you really want to get close to your kids, you know, buy one of these things. He said he spends a lot of time with his kids, or at that time was spending a lot of time with his kids conceiving and printing things. And it was a way that they were really working together on that. So, I think that might intrigue me to some point. But, you know, I see this thing, the whole concept of don't believe the hype. I don't think it's necessarily being hyped in spaces other than the tech world, where we tend to get excited about a lot of things that are very, 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 very early stage.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't think the average person, you know, the Joe Sixpack, even really is aware of 3D printing to any extent that other than it's just, oh, that's kind of cool.
Well, so it was interesting because I talked to one of my mom's best friends. I ran into her at Costco, and we were talking about all kinds of different stuff. And she somehow brought up it's her nephew or something that is a designer, and he was kind of hyping her on 3D printing and how cool it was and all the things she could do with it and so forth. And she brought up ceramics, and she said, you know, I used to do ceramics with your mom. And they would go to this place that had a, I guess it's a kiln, and they would choose the design that they wanted to make, and they would make it out of ceramics and then fire it up, and then they would paint it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, that's more hands-on, and it's just, you know, you're part of the materials, and the materials are part of you because it's all over you. And she was talking all about that, and she says, no, but so does that mean you have to know computers to be able to make the designs? And I realize the answer is yes.
Yeah.
You know, unless you buy a design from a library and maybe modify it. I'm sure there'll be high-end tools to do that. Don't you guys think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's still pretty geeky to run one of these printers and set it up and
yeah,
do all those things, you know?
Yeah, I just think it's early on in the life of this thing right now. So I think there's a lot to be seen and a lot to grow out of it. So I'm anxious to look, you know, see what happens and where it goes, because it may become so darned inexpensive to have it. It might be just fun to have.
Yeah, it could be. Well, there was another story in Minnesota that really got me angry.
Oh, geez.
Amazon to stop paying Minnesota bloggers for sales traffic. I've made $28 over the last 3 years. And how the hell am I going to replace that?
You got me beat by a couple of bucks, I think. You know, I was one of the original 1,800 affiliates, and I never earned crap from that.
Oh, how funny. How funny.
It still sucks, though.
It does. But there's no margin. If they've got to pay the sales tax, there's no gross margin left for them to cough up anything for. Plus, they're trying to make a point. They're trying to get the bloggers pissed off and say something to Dayton and try to get it changed. But
they're just trying to. If you read any of the comments on that story in the Star Tribune story, anyway, it's those people again stopping taking time out from watching Fox News Network to respond. So it's one of those things. Yeah, you're right. They're making a statement, and it's very, very possible that they'll fix that loophole and everybody will go back to making their tens of dollars.
Exactly.
Well, but there are, I mean, the affiliate marketers that, I mean, they quoted in the Star Tribune story some people who were making significant money, and they obviously have to change their business or move to another state.
Yeah.
If they're going to continue you know, bring in, and some of these people are making, you know, big money. I mean, weren't they quoting somebody that claimed they made $1 million 1 year or something? I mean, some outrageous number like that.
Oh, I never saw that.
Yeah, I didn't get far into
that. Well, maybe it wasn't that much, but it was big money. And it was like, this alters their whole business model, like brings it to a screeching halt. I mean, Amazon's not the only one they're making commissions off of, but yeah. it's the largest one of that ilk. And so it's the affiliate marketers that are being hurt the worst, and some of them will move. I mean, you know, because it's probably easiest thing for them to do, and others will go get a job at Target or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, the only way that, in my view, that the affiliate model works is if, you know, if I'm known for something specific. Let's say that I'm the iPad guy. I've got an iPad site, and now all the case people advertise on my site, but then also I'm an affiliate. So when somebody clicks on a link, not only do I get the ad revenue, but then if they complete the purchase, I actually get a little commission from it. The only thing is when you're an affiliate, then the content, you know, separating content from ads and from affiliate incentives is really hard when you run the whole thing. You know, how do you not write a glowing review and forget the negatives? And that's why I'm always suspect of sites where I go and somebody's hyping a plugin and it turns out that it's a professional plugin for WordPress and it's, you know, $80 a month. Because it's like, okay, you know.
Well, it's too bad we're going to lose all that tax money of people, you know, reporting that income.
Yeah, well, you'd be exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I made $30. Oh, well, I should pay my fair share.
Well, that's why when I go to Mystic Lake, I try to keep my winnings under 2,000 every time.
And you take it in nickels? Do you ask?
Yeah, exactly.
Nickel slots, baby.
Did you guys see this Kickstarter map?
I thought this was fascinating.
It was kind of interesting to see that Minnesota is most interested in tech.
Yeah. And California and New York State are the two that are really into theater and publishing and photography, you know, the arts. And we're just tech. We don't care about all that other stuff.
So my question was though, I didn't get all the way through the paper that was published on this, by these guys at the University of Toronto, but, on their map, there's South Dakota has a dark spot or is dark like Minnesota is, but it doesn't say what it's funding.
Oh, it doesn't. Yeah, you're right.
Motorcycle stuff, you know, Sturgis
motorcycle stuff.
Yeah.
So that's I think it's interesting.
Well, I thought it was fascinating. We'll put a link in the show notes, of course, and it's just interesting to see how people shift around. You know, the interesting thing about Texas and games, because that's what's the number one there in terms of Kickstarter projects, it's all about Austin, Texas. I mean, Austin was always Silicon Valley East, and there was a shuttle going back and forth to the Bay Area in Austin, and I remember when I was at Vignette, we actually had an all hands meeting and we were going through a whole list of stuff. And one of the agenda items was keep your mouth shut on the flight from Austin to San Jose and back and forth, you know, San Francisco. And don't open your laptop and don't take out, you know, documents and, you know, blah, 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 because there was just way, way, way too much eavesdropping going on. So I thought that was kind of humorous.
Yeah, people do read over your shoulder and planes, so you got to really watch out.
Yep.
But yeah, that's a big issue in the Valley. But I'm sure it is an issue on certain plane flights too. Yep. Yeah, because Austin is like ground central for the gaming industry, isn't it? Game developers, anyway.
Right. Well, you know, it's surprisingly, I would actually let me actually take a step back, because my son Alex, so we took him on a tour when we were in Redmond of DigiPen, the number three game college in the country. Well, it turns out there are 350 game development companies in Washington State.
Wow.
Clustered around Seattle and Redmond and all that. And it's huge, and their placement rates are off the charts. I mean, they're in the 90th percentile for just about everything. You know, if you're an artist, if you're a computer programmer, if you're a design management degreed person, and all that. And it's because gaming is getting so huge. So yeah. I was surprised at that. Anyway.
Huh. So Seattle and Austin are both big game.
They are.
Markets. Well, and I don't know how many companies are based in Austin, but I've always heard that the developers are very heavily or densely located there, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, so speaking of flying back and forth, I think people should start pedaling based on this next story.
Yeah.
Wasn't that something? Now, who put this in?
I did, because I saw that photo in the Star Tribune print business section. I think it wasn't it over the weekend or something. And it's like this guy built this, what do they call it? The Rot Racer. And it's a bicycle powered vehicle with an enclosed cabin
that'll do 70 miles an hour. And if they can get it certified for the freeway, you'll be able to take it on the highway.
But he only has taken it up to 45. So that was a disappointment.
Well, he needs the funding.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That was a disappointment.
So the pedaling charges the battery. So it does not power the vehicle, even though I'm sure you could gear it that way. But that's the intent. So.
Yeah. Rick Cronfield. So, kind of came out of nowhere. I'd never heard about this before, but they're having a little event, which we'll talk about later. But, another inventor, entrepreneur in Minnesota doing, you know, leading-edge stuff here.
Yeah, the only downside is I'd hate to have a sanitation truck back into me when I was sitting in one of these. That'd be the only downside.
Well, and it better have a damn good windshield wiper on that windshield, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, I find it interesting that the guy is like, what is he dressing for his role in Mad Men in that picture?
Isn't that a great photo? It's like the guy has some style. He's a theater major.
He is. Yeah.
Michael Roventeen would love this. You know.
Absolutely.
But the guy's also 50 years old. So,
hey, what's the matter with that?
Hey, it's the biggest.
Hey, let's hear it for, you know, older entrepreneurs, you know.
Well, and that's one of the biggest groups of entrepreneurs are people that are 50 plus. So
exactly.
There you go. And
don't you forget it, Bubby.
That's right.
That's right. And they're more successful in general. You know, the Kauffman Foundation studies have shown such things. So
yeah, yeah.
So being the slave to Hollywood gossip that I am, because you know I am I know you guys come to me.
You're all over it.
Yeah, what's happening in Hollywood, Phil?
Yeah.
I saw a video of Justin Bieber using the new Instagram video, and this poor kid is wasted.
Oh jeez.
He got a bottle of Boone's Farm or something.
Oh no, I'm sure he's I'm sure he's
got a couple
of
bucks.
No, that brought to light the fact that Instagram is now offering video clips very much like Vine.
Is anyone excited about this? I mean, it just seems like it's a copy of Vine.
Well, but it's 15 seconds instead of 6.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, how great is that?
Oh, that changes everything.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
As a heavy Instagram user, I'm sorry, I just can't get excited about video, you know. I couldn't get into Vine and I didn't, and my tweet when this was announced was don't screw up Instagram with this, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of still photograph kind of folks that aren't going to give a hoot, and their biggest concern will be, you know, I don't mess with a good thing here, you know?
Well, I'll tell you though, the way that it integrates with Facebook is going to get it traction. Because the video shows up just like a photo does now in your news feed. And it looks really good. You know, it's a good player and so forth. And that alone is going to drive adoption, yeah. I think, much more so over Vine when you click on something and it has to pop up a web page so it'll load.
Have you seen a lot of, do you watch a lot of the Vines?
Spend any time
with that? Yeah, see, I don't either.
Yeah, but here's the thing. So my daughter, she's showing us some stuff, and then she talks about this friend of hers who used to work at the Apple store with her, and this guy started goofing around with Vine and doing these really funny little things. Like on Father's Day, he does a Vine of him laying in bed, and he goes, "Yeah, Dad, I'll be right there." And then it cuts. "I said I would be right there. I just got to finish this." And then the last, second is him holding up a video game controller. And it was very funny. And she said he started doing these when he was at the Apple store, and it took off. And he ended up getting a job as a social media guy for, I can't remember the name of the company now. I should know. I'll find out. But it just took off because he ended up with something like 30,000 followers. Mm. And so people think he's hilarious. It's like anything else. It's like podcasting, right? I mean, remember when we started out, Tim, and we were at Podcast Minnesota back in what? 2005 or six or something.
Five, yeah.
And how, oh God, everybody was talking about how many users they had or how many listeners they had and so on and so forth. And there were some people that really broke out, but they were few and far between. And then, now there's 125,000 podcasts. So.
Yeah. The question is, can they sustain it? But in the example of your daughter's friend, here's a guy that went and got a job out of it. So
right.
It was worth the effort, And, yeah. And a lot of kids like that are creative with video can get into advertising and marketing related positions,
yep.
Because they're creatively driven, and so good for them.
Yeah. Well, and they get it. I mean, they understand how it works and what's powering it and all that. And okay. Yep. So who, Tim, I'll bet you put this in here about the Google Reader replacement.
Yeah, because this will probably be the last show before they switch it off.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Only 9 days left before Google Reader goes away. And well, I've switched it. I've switched
to get another story that is like, okay, fine.
Well, no, it's I use it every day. So, yeah. And Feedly is what I have switched to. And it's works fine.
Yeah, same thing here.
And it's very transparent. You just go to their site, you sign in and import your Google Reader, and you start using that. So it's very simple. You can, of course, go to the Google, what does they call it, takeout, and you can download all your Google Reader stuff, which everyone should probably do that if they have used Google Reader.
Right.
But what I was surprised is there's so many other people like Dig and AOL that are doing readers as well. So maybe we'll see RSS readers come back.
Well, I'll put a link in the show notes to some open source Google Reader alternatives if you choose to host them yourself. So if you have a web host, there are ways that you can just import your OPML file into this, and now you've got your own reader.
Yeah, I've tried that, and it's
ugly.
No, it works. It works. It's just a lot of trouble. So
yeah.
And I like the mobile apps that Feedly.
So do I.
Provides, and it's a nice service.
Yep.
So it does everything that Google Reader does. So I think it's great.
Well, my big fear is that they're going to get rid of FeedBurner, and just about everybody I know with a blog that's self-hosted uses FeedBurner. And
that's the big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can put your own script together to do that, but
but you'll lose all your readers.
I know. I'm not sure exactly how you would do the transition and not lose all your readers.
I don't either.
Well, I can give the report for TypePad. I know your favorite old blogging platform, Steve. They switched to FeedBlitz, or they're trying to hype FeedBlitz as the answer to all those that were using FeedBurner.
Yeah, no, FeedBlitz is great, but switching over, I'm not sure if you can switch over and keep all of your subscriptions.
Oh, yeah, that's the downside.
Feedly looks like the solution, though, huh?
Yeah, for RSS readers, yes.
Yeah, because it took them, because they literally have hundreds of thousands of people that are doing this. So if you're going to do it, by the way, listeners, do it right away, because it took them about almost 4 days for the for them to send me in Feedly, in the app itself, to send me a heads up that it had been transferred. So it's gonna take time for this all to move.
I just went into mine, and it looks like they transferred all of mine in there.
That's great.
Cool.
I personally think the Feedly thing looks pretty good. So
yeah. Well, they also have, just so everybody knows too, is Feedly has a plugin extension for Chrome that is just gorgeous.
Yeah, that's what I use. Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. Gotta get that.
Yeah, and I don't know if they have a Safari extension or if they have an Internet Explorer, they do have a web base, so you can go there in any browser, and it's a great alternative. So this is a good, glad you put this in here, Tim.
It's a little reminder, just a little one more little service from the folks at Minivate.
That's right.
To remind you to switch your Google Reader feed.
That's right.
And another nice little service of Minovate is
Steve's security tip of the week.
Okay, it's not.
All right, what is it?
Well, it's not exactly a security tip, as it is a privacy tip, right?
Yeah. No, I put this one in.
Yep. And
I thought it was a good one.
Oh, wait a minute. So this is Tim's security tip of the week.
There you go.
Well, okay, so Tim. Sorry, somebody explain it then.
Well, so first we should explain Tor. So what Tor is, T-O-R, is it's a service.
Is a flag to the NSA.
Yeah, well, Yeah, look what we're doing. So it's a service that allows you to anonymize your web traffic, because it bounces through a whole bunch of proxy servers on its way and then on the return. And so you are theoretically obscure and anonymous as you surf the web. And there's been a lot of analysis done, and a lot of people have talked about whether or not this is actually true, but it is true. And it really is one of the few ways to do it. And so Tim, tell us about the onion pie.
It's basically a version of RES. What is it called? The version of Linux that runs on the Raspberry Pi. I think it's called Rasputin or something like that.
Yeah,
anyway, it's a version that includes the Tor server, so you can run your own Wi-Fi access spot running on the Raspberry Pi that is also a Tor server. So it, you know, you can connect to it and it's completely anonymous surfing. So it's a great idea, I think.
Well, there's also, and we'll put some links in the show notes to this, but there's also products that you can install on your computer to anonymize your traffic as well. So you can use the Tor servers that are out there. And just so people know that the way it works is if you were to put one of these and hang it on your Wi-Fi, and it would act as a Tor proxy server, which it is, anything coming into it is already anonymized from somewhere else, even if it's the original point. And then it sends it somewhere else to another one, and it anonymizes it further, and on and on and on and on and on through the chain. And so this is really cool. I mean, is it, one thing I couldn't figure out is, basically you have to buy a Raspberry Pi and make it yourself, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like you can buy one.
Yeah, they're $35 for the Raspberry Pi, and then you've got to get a Wi-Fi access point with a antenna on it, which would probably be at least that, if not more.
Yeah.
And a SD card, which you probably have laying around anyway. And then it's Raspbian, which is the operating system that comes with Raspberry Pi that you put onto the SD card. And you plug it into it, it just runs off a USB. So you just, any USB cable can power the thing and, power it up.
Yep.
And there you go.
Well, and so the only downside with this is Ars Technica did an article, and we'll put a link in the show notes. Use of Tor and email cryptography could increase your chances that the NSA keeps your data. And so this new $2 billion data center that's being put in Utah, one of the things that the NSA has been reported to be working on for a long time are quantum computers, which would allow them to essentially make 128-bit encryption or even 256-bit encryption kind of a moot point. So they're storing all this stuff in the hopes that at some point in the not-too-distant future, computing power will be to the point where they'll be able to decrypt all this stuff. Because it was always, like on the Mac, you can open up Disk Utility and you can create a disk image, and you can encrypt that disk image. And so there's stuff that I have, for example, on Dropbox that, it's just personal stuff that I want to have there and that my family has access to, and everybody knows the super secret passphrase. And I have it there because, God forbid I drop dead of a heart attack or get hit by a bus.
That never happened, Steve.
No. Or the computer gets stolen or whatever. I mean, this stuff is there, so they're going to be able to get into it. And that thing is encrypted with 256-bit encryption, but that means that, Dropbox is open, so it's probably already been stored somewhere. And let's at least consider that. But that, I think the Tor thing from a anonymizing standpoint is a good thing. One more thing to point out, and then I'll shut up, is that going through Tor slows you down.
Oh, yeah.
So that's your trade-off, is it's going to take time to surf. But, if you're going to some WikiLeaks mirror and you don't want anyone to know that you're downloading all the WikiLeaks stuff, it's probably a good idea. Right?
Yep. Unless you want to go live in an embassy somewhere.
Or if you're hiding out in Hong Kong.
Yeah, there you go.
You want to call Assange your friend.
Right.
My buddy. Listen, guys, Steve wants to know. He does. Are you excited about the Jobs movie?
Yeah.
Ashton Kutcher.
Well, actually, the preview looks pretty good.
I thought it did too.
They make it look pretty good. So,
and his manner—he's nailed Steve Jobs' mannerisms.
Yeah,
I get a kick out of it because in the tech world, Steve Jobs is either an ass or a god, and most people think he's a god. So, I think that the haters on the movie are just like, well, it's just not good enough for Steve Jobs. So, I don't know. I think it's fine.
Well, I think that
it's a movie,
It's a movie. I know.
And Ashton Kutcher is an angel investor in tech. So, I support Ashton.
Yeah.
I walked right by him in Vegas and I didn't even recognize him.
Well, the only thing is, though, the guy that plays Woz.
Yeah.
Totally is wrong. The casting is totally wrong.
Oh, really?
I've seen this. I've seen a couple of other clips. And it's just not a fit at all.
Well, that must be why Woz slammed it, huh?
It could very well be, yeah.
He didn't like himself.
Yeah.
Wanted Ashton Kutcher to play him.
Right.
That's his self-image.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, so
Tim, what a few pounds on the old Woz has,
Yeah. Yeah, but he has.
You got to like the guy, though. He speaks up on things, and he's approachable. And, you know, somebody just saw him in an airport and went and did a really good interview of him, you know. And
well, as a shareholder, though, there are times when I wish he would just keep his mouth shut.
Shut the F up.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, seriously? You know, I mean,
yeah, the Apple PR must be pulling their hair out with the guy all the time cropping up, and then they have to respond or whatever.
I'm sure. Well, so Phil, you asked, is anybody excited to see this movie? I would not use the word excited.
Okay. I'm going to wait till it comes out on video.
There you go.
That's when I'll see it.
There you go.
Exactly. Yeah.
Redbox.
When they stream it.
It's on Redbox, I'm all over it for a buck.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, speaking of which, you know what's been really great? My wife and I have watched the Newsroom series over the last month or so on HBO. Yeah. And we were using the HBO Go app on my iPad. Yeah. And then I'd have to push it to the Apple TV.
Yeah,
And it's now on the Apple TV. So they're starting to add a few things. And so that's good. My daughter last night was just beyond excited. She's like, you got to be kidding me. That means that Game of Thrones is on it, and I can watch Game of Thrones. It's like, oh, please.
Is that going to cause a lot of people to go out and spend $99 and get an Apple TV? Or,
well, you have to have HBO on your cable connection in order to get it. Yeah.
Which is pricey.
Right.
For a lot of people. I mean, once The Sopranos wasn't on HBO, we didn't really give a crap about it anymore. We don't pay for it.
Yeah.
Huh. What is it, like $15 a month?
No, it's isn't it more than that?
Well, yeah, because you have to buy bundles. So you say I want HBO a la carte. They're like, we gotta have HBO and you gotta have these other 17 channels. And oh, by the way, that bumps you up to the next tier, which is another $40 a month. You know, and you're like, oh, geez.
I'm not doing it. I pay my $7.99 a month for Netflix. Of course, all I do is watch Rockford Files, but I'm almost through season one.
Well,
Rockford Files?
The Rockford 1974.
Files? Oh, I love the Rockford Files. Oh, James Garner was awesome in that. Oh, yeah. You know what's funny, though, is here's my dad. We're sitting and we're watching something with James Garner in it. I'm telling him that all the Rockford Files are available on Netflix, and he goes, you're kidding me. He goes, man, I would love to watch that. And then he's talking about on PBS, they had some show about television greats or whatever, and James Garner was on there. And he goes, you know, the only thing is James Garner looked like shit. I said, well, Dad, you know, he's like 2 years younger than you are. Yeah. And he goes, well, yeah, that's probably why.
So basically you told your dad he looked like shit?
Well, no, I let him tell himself. Well, I mean, I look at him compared to what he looked like when he was 50. You know, he had almost black hair, and he was, you know, in great shape, and you know, he looked like a cop and or a detective, and so did James Garner. I mean, you know, now the guy's he's gone now, but no, he was looking like 10 miles of bad road. Anyway, on another note,
what note is that?
What upcoming events are there? Well, anything interesting?
Yeah.
No. Let's see. WordPress user group, always fun. This thing that Andrew Eklund is putting on seems somewhat interesting. This Cicerone MBA program he's doing. I think they host these, quarterly, I believe?
Well, he's doing really. And then that, it's almost like every other month now, at least. Andrew puts on good events. So I went to the last one and it drew a big crowd, and I'm going to hit that one.
ROI and the Art of the Agile Budget.
Right.
That's really fascinating.
Huh. Which is, this is a marketing view, you know, using Agile, trying to budget your marketing budget in an Agile way. I think that's right, isn't it? Graham?
Yes. And you know, almost like real-time decision making, you know, which is interesting. And he's got a senior marketing person from Pillsbury. And I forget who else is on the panel, but it'll be lots of fun. It's actually a breakfast this time. The last one was an evening thing, and the MBA stood for marketing, booze, and art. But now the MBA stands for something different. And the
marketing, breakfast, and art, I guess.
Or it's not art, it's something else. But anyway, yeah, it's definitely a breakfast thing. But and he says if you don't want to pay his fee, he said, pitch me. I'll probably let you in for free.
I'm sure he appreciates us making that public.
Yeah, right, 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 right.
It's on his email, and he says,
is it? Okay.
You know, plenty of people pitch me all the time, I pitch plenty of people all the time. So he says, now I'm turning the tables. You pitch me, and he says, and I'll probably buy it.
Funny.
So I did.
So yeah, he's the Cicerone. I know that he hired a new marketing person not too long ago. So I think that, you know, I see a lot of this. He now publishes a newsletter, and we see these events.
Right.
So somebody's, you know, driving Andrew out there to get some business, and let's go. Let's make this happen. So.
Oh, yeah. And he's a regular columnist in Twin Cities Business Magazine. And yes, their last MBA was at their new offices, which I don't know if they actually moved or if they just expanded, but it's quite large. So he must have been growing, adding employees.
They still over there on Third?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's a fun guy. He's got a great, manner about him, and just who he is and how his brain's wired.
He's a no holes barred speaker. He doesn't, he lacks that filter that, you know, that he says stuff just falls out of his brain onto his tongue. I love it. He's just great.
Yeah.
Really likable guy.
Yep.
I like him a lot.
And unless they did move, Graham, they're right next to the Zuba's office.
So. Oh, you're kidding. Well, you know, I can't remember where he used to be, but it's right there in the warehouse district. I forget the name of the building. I walked into it and I forget, but they kind of look like a familiar location, but I'm not sure. He could have moved a block away from where he was. I don't know. But it looked to me like he had, 5,000 or 6,000 square feet at least. Nice offices.
Oh, nice. So.
But this one, he's holding at his favorite golf course. I think he lives over that way, Midland Hills, which is a very nice place off 280 in Roseville.
And it's a great facility for these kinds of things.
It is.
I've been to several things there. And then becoming a customer company for Megan 360 with Jeremiah Ouyang and Peter Coffey from Salesforce.
Yep.
That'll be a phenomenal event.
Yeah, I signed up for that. I don't know. Is it still available, guys?
Yes, it is. It looks
good. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks very interesting.
They're doing that at the Metropolitan, maybe? Is that where they're doing it? Yep, Metropolitan in at 394 and 100.
Yeah.
There's also this the Rot Racer thing that you talked about earlier on that. That event is the 18th of July.
Yeah, and that's an Eventbrite sign up as well. I suspect a freebie kind of a thing.
I would hope so, yeah.
Yeah, afternoon event.
And then there's the Life Science Lean In coming up in October. What's that one?
That's a biggie. That's the next mini analytics event. And, you know, these guys are killing it. And I'm part of the group that organizes, works on helping organize these events. But this is a nonprofit group of analytics pros in Minnesota. And, you know, their last two events, they've drawn 600 to 800 people, and I have no doubt they'll do it again for this one, because there's a lot of life science, meaning healthcare, med tech folks in this town, as we all know, and analytics is a huge part of what they do, certainly at firms like Optum. This particular event, they did secure as a venue, after much work, to find a venue large enough to do what they need to do with breakout sessions and everything. The Optum folks were kind enough to let them use their Eden Prairie campus, which is the old ADC headquarters, not far from where Steve lives, right?
Yep. It's a mile and a half, 2 miles away. Yep.
Yeah, so they're in the process of seeking speakers and keynoters and sponsors, and it'll be a big one. They've announced the date of Friday, October 11th, all day. The event link to actually sign up is not going to probably go up for a while yet, probably sometime in July, I would think.
Okay.
But Twitter.com mini analytics is how you follow what's going on there.
Cool. And then last but not least is this Cyber Summit that is coming in October. And, you know, if Janet Napolitano, who's head of the Department of Homeland Security, is right, and we have our Cyber Pearl Harbor happening this year, maybe a lot of people will go to this event.
I got to think that'll be a big news-making event.
Probably.
And the NSA will be there, I'm sure.
Well, that and...
Whether we know it or not.
And we'll have to, budget another $1 trillion or so to spend on cybersecurity. So
are we going to try to get a collective press pass and go and cover that thing, or?
You know, we should.
We probably should.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be a good one.
Wear our tinfoil hats and...
Yeah. Well, hey, since this is episode 222 on the 22nd, did anybody buy lottery tickets with twos in them?
I forgot. No?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't. Darn.
Well, I'm pissed off because all these tickets and the scratch-offs or anything that I buy, they're all defective. None of them work.
None of them work.
What the hell?
It's a quality issue is what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
As someone whose dad won the lottery once, you must be tempted quite often to buy tickets.
You know, it's just so funny because I've said this before. My dad expected that he would live to maybe be in his mid-70s because both of my grandfathers died at 69. And that was the average lifespan was 75. And so he sort of geared his whole retirement and his money and everything to that. And then my mom gets lung cancer and dies at 62. So he had all these extraneous expenses. And it was about a year and a half later, he wins $100,000 in the lottery.
Awesome.
And after taxes and stuff like that, I mean, it would, and he lived to 87. So if it hadn't been for that, he would have been screwed.
God bless the lottery.
Yeah. Of course, he burned through every nickel, but still.
Good for him.
Well, yeah. You know, I tried to convince him. He always wanted a Lincoln Town Car, and I told him, I said, you know, you can go buy a Lincoln Town Car now. And he's like, well, you know, and he goes out and he buys a used 2002 Buick Park Avenue in 2003. Close. Had 22,000 miles on it. And, you know, I asked him, I said, so why'd you do that? And he goes, you know, Steve, I just can't spend the money. And it's that growing up in the Depression thing where he talked about being a little boy and walking down the alleyway with his wagon, picking up, you know, taking a stick and going through ash heaps to find little chunks of coal so he could participate in keeping the family home warm. And,
even when you win the lottery,
you
can't go blow it like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but I heard, well, you probably know this if you know George Reese, you know, when Instratus got acquired by Dell, he starts tweeting right away, okay, I'm going and buying a Tesla, whatever the top model is. So, you know, but he made enough where he can go blow $100,000 if he wants, you know, I guess.
Yeah. I like George.
Oh, George is a character.
He's a
piece of work.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
And, you know, they cashed in big. We don't know how big yet, but we know it was big.
Yeah.
So you're going to see a Tesla around town here.
Well, two of them, because Scott Libman from Magnets 360, I think he's getting his this month or next month.
Which model?
Well, the S, so whatever it's, you know, $70,000-$80,000.
There's actually quite a few of those around.
I suppose.
I've seen one. Just one. But, you know, I've only seen one Rolls Royce here. Erwin Jacobs had a Rolls Royce.
Yep.
And Minnesotans don't really show off too much.
No. And even less up in Fargo, I hear. It's like very verboten up there. But, you know, I had a buddy who actually cracked up a Tesla.
You know, God.
Robbie Cordo? Did I ever tell you that story?
No.
He cracked up his client's Tesla. The two-seater. I don't know. Was that an S? Are all the two-seaters Tesla S's?
S is the sedan.
Oh, okay. So what's the two-seater? That's
something. I can't remember.
Anyway, he cracked it up. Some guy, he rear-ended some guy out on highway five. In fact, I went right by it. We were going to the same meeting.
Oh, out God.
In Minnetrista, advisory board meeting. And I'm coming up on this crash and I go, oh my God, that's Robbie driving his client's Tesla. And the whole front end was accordioned.
Oh.
Apparently his foot slipped off the brake or hit the accelerator or something. And look out when you goose that thing.
Well, that's worse than my story of we had a state of Minnesota audit for sales tax to make sure we were paying our sales tax. And when I went to lunch, I backed out and I backed into the auditor's car. So, and she had just had it repaired because somebody rear-ended her. It's like, oh God.
Here's a story, guys, that I forget. I think we just completely, it was really got to be one of the biggest stories of the week.
What?
And I didn't realize, and we did miss it, that our own Tim Elliott is bringing back Winecast.
Really?
He's blogging again, and he's going to do a podcast.
Yep, podcast is coming back.
And he's
fabulous.
And he's not going to invite us at all.
What? You're not going to have us on as guests? Of course, yeah, I don't drink wine, so.
You don't.
No.
Oh.
No. Man. Yeah.
We got to change that.
So, Tim, what prompted the return to the? I mean, you've done Winecast. You started Winecast years ago. So, tell us a little bit about that.
9 years ago.
And was it just something that sort of fell by the wayside because you got busy on other things?
Yes. Yes. And I just decided I like doing it, and there's enough people out there that listen to it, so I might as well start it again.
I think that's great.
Cool. Yeah.
I think it's wonderful. Do you have any ideas what the first topic is going to be or the first discussion is going to be on your podcast?
It'll be some obscure region of Italy. I haven't decided exactly which one, but it'll be a little known part of Italy, and we'll talk about that.
Eden Prairie, Italy.
There you go. No,
it'll probably be the region that's up near. It's one of the few wine regions where the Appalachian crosses two countries. So part of it's in Italy and part of it's in Czech Republic.
Mm.
So that'll probably be the Appalachian because it's just so unique and the wines that come out of there are great. So
are you going to do a video podcast or is it going to be audio?
No, just audio.
Yeah,
video is too hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
you know, and I don't find those videos where it's just talking heads to be that interesting. It's not worth the effort.
Yeah.
Will this be a weekly podcast?
Yeah.
Monthly? Okay, good.
No, it'll be weekly.
And
just
I
like
see,
it used to be.
And I see your face shows up on the first page of Google results on WineBlogger.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's crazy.
Yeah, apparently you commented on something on Google Plus about the cork dork, and that's what shows up. So how are you promoting it? Are you just promoting it on Google Plus or your return, I mean?
Oh, and on Twitter and whatnot.
Yeah. Cool. So. Getting some of your old wine blogger friends, what's his name, to help you hype it or?
We'll see how it goes.
Good deal.
Okay, we'll be ready.
Congratulations. We'll look forward to it, man. That's great.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyway, listen, we've got our own things to cover and talk about next week on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
So we'll see you next week.
Take care.
Gotcha.
We'll be right back.